Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stuart Thompson. Welcome to Personal Transformation, a show about transforming from sexual abuse. Tonight, we'll be covering a few things, a little bit from what I've covered in the past, and I will also be covering about loss and grief. But first, I'd like to touch base on some announcements, and I have a couple of questions for you all. First off, to start off with, the announcements. To begin with, the Healing Garden. As I've stated in the past, we are accepting donations, whether it be cash or stuff for the garden, such as topsoil, plants, etc., peat moss, etc. You can drop them off to the gatehouse at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard West in Toronto. We're Etobicoke. I'll touch more on that as far as the address and that is concerned and phone number later on. And also, I would like to, mention about the sale, charity sale that's going to be on August 21st. And we are also accepting donations for that as well. And another thing I'd like to put out to you as well, anybody who's interested in peer phone support, please get a hold of the gatehouse, and we'd certainly like your input in regards to that. And if you'd like to get a hold of the gatehouse, you can call at area code 416-255-5900, extension 225, or anybody here would be happy to help you. Or you can email the gatehouse at www.thegatehouse.org, and you can pass us an email, and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. Now, I guess this is a big question before I get into really what I want to get into this evening. And now, for example, if you have children and you want to protect them in some way or fashion so they're not abused themselves, so what would you tell your young child? That's a really, really good question. I've been thinking about this, and I've heard other things from other parents or other people, just what they would tell their children. And for example, now, obviously, you're going to tell them not to touch their private parts, and the only really person that should be touching them should be themselves, unless your mommy or your daddy has to help you with something. And even then, they have to be pretty young age where you'd even have to be doing that. Other than that, I'd be telling my child, those are your parts. No one is to touch them. And even if you're in a school, and I was giving this example tonight by Maria at the Gatehouse, for example, like she tells her children, like if you're in school and you have a buddy system where you go to the bathroom, just make sure your child, sure, they have a buddy to go to the bathroom, but make sure they go to the stall by themselves. And another important key note here is what happens if somebody does touch them, and what would you tell your child then? Well, I mean, I know I would tell my child, well, you know what, you may be scared and all that, but I would insist that they would tell me, and also reassuring them that I would, you know, they're not going to get in trouble for doing it. You know, it's the right thing to do, and it's the wrong thing for that person to be touching your private parts. But you really need to reassure them that it's safe to tell them. Rather, it's safe for them to tell you that somebody has done that. Now, this is it's a pretty sticky topic, but nonetheless, it should be done. It should be done. Your children should know and should be aware that that there are predators out there and will do anything. And I know, just listening through the media, I here in Toronto and abroad, I've heard all kinds of stories of predators coming into schools and doing these acts to our children, which is totally, totally gross and, as far as I'm concerned, and wrong, more importantly. So, and also, I guess it's a really big thing too, is that the support is there for anybody out there who's had this happen to your children. Like, for example, the Gatehouse will support you in any way or fashion in regards to this matter, both your children and the parents as well. And like I said, if you have any questions, you can phone the Gatehouse at 416-255-5900, and anybody will help you, or you can email the Gatehouse at www.thegatehouse.org, and we will be more than happy to help you. Now, I've mentioned this before. I've talked about this kind of briefly off and on, and I'm really, really impressed with Twitter in regards to the type of survival support that I found on there. And I'm going to give you some examples tonight of what I found. For example, every Tuesday night at, I guess it would be 6 o'clock Pacific time or 9 o'clock Eastern, or Eastern Standard Time, there's a Twitter chat on there with Bobby and Rachel. Now, Bobby and Rachel are both survivors themselves, and both of them have written books in regards to this matter of childhood sexual abuse and how it affected them and how it affected their lives to now. And they both have written books about it. But now, for example, now, let me see, okay, now, where you can hashtag, where is it here? I'm lost already. Sexual abuse chat. And you will just hashtag sexual abuse chat, and you'll find it on Twitter. And both author and therapist Rachel Thompson and author and therapist Bobby Parrish. And both of these ladies are wonderful. They offer great insight and great values in regards to this cause. And I would encourage you that if you didn't really want to talk to anybody, you just wanted to do it either by lurking or participating, they'd be more than happy to hear from you and more than willing to give you the support that you need. And they're already now, those two ladies, what I'm talking about, right now they've started a project. It's called No More Shame, and they're looking for anybody who wants to get their story. This is only in the U.S., of course, but I want to mention it just to show you that there is help out there, even abroad. And again, if you hashtag No More Shame, you can participate in that as well. And I find these ladies to be very inspiring, and it's a good way to start off your recovery if you're looking for some form of therapy. And I'm online, it's a great way to do it because they don't have to know who you are, where you're from, anything, and you can do it anonymously, and you can get that bit of help that you may require. Another one is called the Good Man. There's another one that's offering the same type of thing. Or you can go to removingthechains.org. They're worldwide, and they offer live chat to survivors, basically 24/7, anywhere you are, anywhere in the world. And you can hashtag the chain. RemovingTheChains.org, and also you can hashtag at AbuseKids. And again, these are another this is another great group giving support or peer support, and I would greatly encourage you to check them out. And again, this, like I've stated, this is on Twitter. Another one I found on there as well. It's called there are other Survivor Secrets, and created by Positivity Smile. This is a support group out of the UK, I should mention. And just to show you that wow, it's all over the place. And the UK is really having their fair share of issues right now with all their scandal of abuse in the with the BBC and with their and their governments, and there's all kinds of things, which I'm not going to get into right now, but I know that the UK is having a real issue with this right now. And I hear about this all the time, and especially on Twitter, I see it all the time. So basically, if you hashtag positive smile, you will find the Survivor Secrets. And again, like I say, they're based out of Leeds, UK. And here's another one. Well, we might as well talk about Canada. Here's another one here. And this is very important. They're called Survivors Suicide Loss and hashtag at Penny Knapp, or Penny, K-N-A-P-P. This person is a survivor of suicide loss, offering support and resources to ease your pain. And they are out of West Lorne, Ontario, Canada. And you can email at rememberingnicholas@.ca. And there's another Twitter support group that are willing to help you in this cause. So that's the great thing. There's support is basically everywhere. It's just you gotta try to find it. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's not enough of it. There should be a lot more. Maybe more people would come out with this, come out and deal with this issue. But I should throw in this as well, that these people I've talked about on Twitter, okay, they're not doctors or anything of the sort. They're just offering peer support as I'm offering peer support here right and now through the Gatehouse. So basically, as far as humanity is concerned, I believe that it's our responsibility to pick this up and to take us to another level. And people like myself and people I've talked about on Twitter have done that, are doing that, actually. And they're taking us to a whole new level. We all must come together and fight for this problem. It is grossly out of hand, and that's an understatement as far as I'm concerned. But we really must all come together and fight this issue once and for all. I'm not talking about just here in Canada. I'm talking about abroad. So, basically, I wanted to say this in the last couple of weeks, but I must apologize if I've offended anybody. I don't think I have, but if I've offended anybody in any way or manner, or you felt I've disrespected you, well, I do apologize. That is not why I'm here. I'm here only to speak freely about child abuse and survivors, and I'm only on your side, as I wish that you were on my side as well. And I'm here to fight for this issue, and I'll fight to my dying day in regards to this issue. And I believe very, 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 very strongly that that I must, and other people must speak up about this. It can't be swept in under the carpet anymore. It's you know, it's gone on long enough. And all the stories that I hear in the media now, it's more and more intense every day. And I really feel that it's gone way too far, too long. And here's another thing I'd like to mention or talk about. I know I've talked about Tom Wilkin before. He's got some great self-help books, and one of the ones I'm talking about is Rebuilding Your House of Self-Respect. That's the second edition, which I've talked about or where I made reference to in the past. Here's another lady I'd like to mention about, another Canadian as well, Deb Mayberry. She released a book not too long ago. It's called Unlock the Door Beyond Sexual Abuse, which I've talked about briefly. Now, I'm going to mention about the two of the ladies I talked about at the beginning of the program. Rachel Thompson, she's released a book on as well called Broken Pieces. And I'm also going to talk about another one, Bobby Parrish, her partner, in regards to that that show I was talking about earlier on Twitter. And Uncoupling from the Shame. These are great. Okay, first off, I should say, I haven't read them. The only one I've read to any extent right off the bat is Tom Wilkin, Rebuilding Your House of Self-Respect. And I've also read Deb Mayberry's book. Now, Deb Mayberry's book is more on stories of survivors. And Tom Wilkin's book, the book that I've talked about, is more specifically geared towards self-help. Although, don't get me wrong, the book by Deb Mayberry, that is, in some ways, I guess you can call it giving you self-help, because it's giving you examples of other survivors, how they've come to where they are today. Anyway, it's a great way to start your healing process. And if you don't want to talk with anybody or even disclose it to anybody, but it's a great way to look at it, and you can get a really good clear vision of what you're going to get yourself into knowing what your problem is. Another thing you could go to do as well is you can go on YouTube and you can check out, you can find out, you can find self-help there as well in regards to this issue. As I'm doing right here now on Blog Talk Radio, I'm talking about it as well. And I know there's other stuff on there as well that will give you help in this, in that manner. Well, the people I've spoken about all have similar experiences like mine and yours, and they've come a long way, and they're victims and survivors all at the same time of sexual abuse, and this should not be taken lightly, and should be honored, especially for those survivors that are out there. And from my experience, the level of peer support that's here at the Gatehouse, fantastic is a good way of putting it. They have so much to offer, and I'm so grateful that I've had this opportunity to come here, and they've given that to me. This is the second chance, or what I call my second chance in life, as where I am now. And even more beautiful is that I'm facilitating now, and I'm showing other people that there's another way of living besides self-destruction. And becoming a facilitator versus being a participant, it's a huge difference. Just to give you an example of what's involved with that. Obviously, if you're here as a participant, the best thing I learned as being a participant is I've learned to exercise my voice, and that's exactly what I've done over a period of time. And now that I'm facilitating, now I'm showing, or I guide participants in a way that they can voice themselves as well. My role is not to do all the talking, but my role is to, as per se, to put the seed in them so they do all the talking. That's what we want. We want them to voice. Our voices have been, we're shut down for all those years, and now it's time to talk about it. Now it's time to deal with it. But that's my role as a facilitator. That's what I'm supposed to do. How I'm supposed to help. That's how it was done to me when I first came here. I remember my two facilitators, Kenny and Lee, they were fantastic. I owe everything to them now, especially to where I am now, giving me a different path to go. And one important thing I should mention about being a facilitator, about our role as a facilitator, our role is not to tell you what you should or shouldn't do. Our role is just basically to plant a seed, to get you to talk about a certain topic, and hopefully by you talking about this certain topic will arouse these inner dark secrets you've got buried inside you, and bring them out so you can move forward. Now, I'm going to jump on to, briefly touch on to what we've talked about in the past. Well, last week we talked about the inner child. I don't know how well that resonated with anybody or not. It's a pretty heavy thing. So, like I've stated, one of the things I said was that if you're going to go really into it real deep, make sure you have some help with you or have somebody that's by your side so they can help you through this difficult time. Now, we've talked about everything from isolation, triggering, grounding, flashbacks, anger, emotional, and then we jumped into inner child, and I basically covered all three stages of what we show you here at the Gatehouse, and through the process, I know I didn't talk about addictions. I really should would like to cover that part where I am now, but. I will be at a little later time, and I will have somebody come in and talk about it as well, besides just myself. But now I'm going to jump into it, and I'm going to get a jump into loss and grief. And basically, what is grief? Grief is a multi-faced response of loss, particularly to the loss of someone or something which is bond or was formed. All thought conventionally focused on emotional response to loss. It is also physical, cognitive, behavioral, social, and physiological dimensions common to the human experience. It is the loss of something or someone dear to us. Example. There is no right or wrong way to grieve, but there are healthy ways to cope with the pain. You can get through it. Grief that is expressed and experienced has the potential for healing and eventually can strengthen and enrich life. Grief is a natural response to loss. It's the emotional suffering that you feel when something or someone you love is taken away. You may associate grief with death of a loved one, but any loss can cause you grief, including, for example, relationship breakup, loss of health, losing a job, losing a financial stability, and miscarriage, death of a pet, loss of a cherished dream, a loved one's serious illness, loss of a friendship, loss of safety after a trauma. Well, those are just some examples. I know there's many others out there, but those are just a few examples. Everyone grieves differently. You must keep that in mind. Grieving is a personal and highly individual experience. How you grieve depends on many factors, including your personality and your coping style, your life experience, your faith, and the nature of the loss. The grieving process takes time. Healing happens gradually. It can't be forced or hurried, and there is no normal timetable for grieving. Some people start to feel better in weeks or months. For others, the grieving process is measured in years. Whatever your grief experience, it's important to be patient with yourself and allow the process to naturally unfold. So that's why I talk about, which I've mentioned in the past, about this whole process of getting through this therapy that we show you here at the Gatehouse. It's a slow process, and everything takes time, and more importantly, it happens in your time, your own time. It doesn't happen when we tell you it's going to happen. It's not going to tell you when your wife or your husband's going to tell you, or your friend or whoever. It happens in your time. You must keep that in the back of your mind. The deep grief of an individual experiences of a loss is normal, for example. Grief is a unique experience for every person. Everyone carries with him or herself the capacity to heal. Now, that's very important. You remember that. Critical to the healing process is having the access to a safe space in which to freely express and explore grief in whatever way makes the sense to the person that this happens to. Now I'm going to talk about the seven stages of grief. One of the most common questions survivors of sexual violence ask is, will the pain ever end? Well, that's a really good question. I often ask that question myself. Will it ever end? It went on for years and years and years, and whenever I thought I forgot about it, I really didn't forget about it. Something would come up, and it would just escalate itself again and be thrown right back in my face. I'm sure many of you can appreciate, but that's what's happened to myself. When you're dealing with the events of your past, the pain can seem overwhelming and never-ending. Survivors are left to cope with a lot of grief over what happened and what was lost. Will you ever get your life back? Well, yes, you'll get your life back. It's just going to take some work. Will you ever reclaim the old you? Yeah, that's a good question. With a little bit of work, you can. Or the new discovered you. Will you ever sleep without nightmares or have carefree day? Good questions. The answer is yes to all those above. But there's a process of grieving that most survivors go through. It may also help to consider the stages of common to sexual abuse survivors and all those experiencing grief. You may not experience all stages, but you might not experience them in this order. So basically, the order that I give to you, it may not happen to you, it may happen to you. Everybody's different, and it may not happen to you in these orders. So basically, I'm just giving you a description of what potentially could happen to you while going through this process. You might even go back to stage or two as new memories surface and you deal with new emotions. However, it can help to identify where you are in the process of recovery and you see each stage not as a conclusion, but as a step on the journey to recovery. Absolutely so. As you go through these processes, whatever pace you go at or whatever stage you go through, you will see over a period of time, actually within weeks, I should say, unless you're really, really stuck, you'll see that there's gradual change. Okay, number one, shock and denial. It can't happen to me. I used to think that, well, why did it happen to me? Well, it can happen to me. Well, it did happen to me. I've heard this from other people before. After experiencing sexual violence, there's such a total confusion and disbelief that a person often goes numb. The mind-body system has to shut down. It is also common for a survivor to deny what happened was rape or abuse or to downplay it. It wasn't so bad. Well, you know, I've talked about this. I've talked about this numb feeling you get inside you. When I get anger or when I have the fear or I have anxiety. Actually, I was talking about more when I was talking about anxiety, but I get this. I've had this deep, nasty feeling inside, this gut-wrenching feeling inside. And that's kind of what this is talking about in the first step. The second, fear, panic, and shame. What do I do now? Once the shock wears off, you're no longer numb. There's some predictable next steps, such as profound anxiety, as I've talked about, and vulnerability. I didn't mention much on that, but yes, that's there as well. How will I survive the loss of this innocence and violation facing my friends and family? Living with my life again. There is a mounting sense of being out of control, which for many survivors also evokes feelings of shame and inadequacy. And this is a lack of control, not surprisingly, can make the memory of sexual violence even worse. Survivor may feel like his or her life is over, like a spirit has died. The effects of sexual violence are long-lasting. Very much so. As anybody listening that's been through this experience will greatly be able to identify with what I've just stated. Like even with myself, like I think 40-plus years of hanging on to this crap. That's a long time. You know, that's a hell of a long time. And I've talked to other survivors with the same experience as myself. And even the ones that have not had as long, it's still basically the same trauma. And just because I got a few years on you, it doesn't mean diddly squat. It still happened to you. It's still bad any way you look at it. And it still has the same type of, as I've talked about with myself and potentially with others as well. So a lack of control, not surprisingly, can make memory of sexual violence even worse. Survivor may feel like his or her life is over, like spirit has died, and effects of sexual violence are long-lasting. That's like I reread that over again, but just to show you that, yeah, it's there. It does happen to us, and that's just some of the effects that happen. And here's another one. Number three, rage. And or our helplessness. How do I dare someone to do this to me? Often people in a phase of swing between rage and profound sadness, both states can be induced by deep underlying vulnerability or helplessness. You've been wounded, feel exposed, or just want to lash out. You turn the rage inward in depressing and self-hatred. Now it's crawling under the covers of escapism, or going through the emotions of living, or fear of failure lurking, dread of being sucked into that compelling black hole of helplessness. You know, that's I can really appreciate that. I've been there many times myself, and it's not a fun place to be. Thought the only person responsible for sexual violence is the perpetrator. Many survivors are likely to over-attribute themselves responsibility, that is, to blame themselves for what happened. It is often easier to try to blame yourself than to understand why someone else would hurt another person that way that you've been hurt. That's why the next phase, while often maddening, is so essential for moving through the grief process. So, like when I talk about, when I've talked about in the past about holding on to something in the past, well, this is kind of where this kind of falls into place. You know, it's there. I can't let go of it. And it's basically controlling how I feel, like when I feel emotionally, physically, like my gut reaction I've talked about and what could potentially happen or that gut feeling you could have from holding on to this. And for most survivors, this is what we do. And we talk about blame. We blame ourselves. I blame myself for many, many years. And I've heard other survivors say the same thing. Blame themselves in many different aspects, how they would blame themselves. And basically, where did it get me? Or where did it get anybody? It didn't really get me anywhere. It held me back. It wouldn't allow me to move forward. It kept me stuck in the past. In other words, my perpetrators were basically still had a handle on me. How I was controlling my life. In many ways, mainly in a self-destructive manner. Now I'm going to talk about guilt. Guilt, damn if you do or if you don't. Feelings of old voices of guilt and shame, violating or compromising an internalized core value or essential part of your self-identity, integrity and esteem, can become louder and more incessant. Self-directed rage keeps taunting you for shortcomings, unworthiness, etc., and can be ultimately drain you. It is at this stage that many survivors wonder if the pain will ever end. You might be part of a support group or engaged in therapy, journaling about your assault, but feel like nothing is helping at this point. It is important to reach out, hold on to hope, and it will get better. Well, that's absolutely right. Because I went through this process. I remember when I went through the phase one. I know it really, really helped me. I know my thought process changed drastically. And my thought process really changed even more when I went through the step two process. Or the phase two process as we have here at the Gatehouse. But, and I can't say this enough, but it took a lot of work. A lot of work. It took a lot of soul that I had to dig up, and I dig up this crap, and I had to sort it out. And it'll be the same for you as well. For some years it'll be easier than others, but nonetheless, it's very 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 dark. And once you dig that up and realize that you're letting it free. After holding for so long, you'll see that how much you change over a period of time. As I've noticed with myself, how much I've changed over a period of time. It's amazing, just simply amazing what it'll do over a period of time. Focused on anger and letting go. Finding out the good from the bad. To reach that powerful, purposeful, and passionate state of focused anger, a survivor must often blend rage and sadness. Some rage can propel us out of shocked and paralyzed or state. And yet, you must also face your sadness and loss to struggle with uncertainty to temper uncontrollable aggression. To make sadder yet wiser assessments and decisions, if you've worked hard and integrated the previous stages, then the reward is focused anger. So basically, what I'm saying is, if you have that focused anger, as I've stated, and it turns into rage, well, you can use that as a tool to change things around. And that's basically what this is saying. by bringing this stuff up, you can change that state. You can change that state of control where it controls you. And you know where I've talked about journaling. Well, here's a good example of, well, you bring this up and you write this stuff down. So then you know where you really know where you're at and why you're angry. You just have to find it. So you have a basis to move forward. What happened to me was terrible and wrong, but there is another side. You're ready to lose that knot of hurt and pain. You're ready to see that while you might never be the person you were before, you are now stronger, wiser, and capable of reclaiming your voice and your life. This is a stage for survivors frequently start using their experiences to help others. For instance, speaking out or volunteering at a rape crisis center. Thought what happened to us was wrong and can never be justified. We might ever begin to see the gifts of that gifts that survival has given us. So I'll talk about the gifts of being a survivor. Well, this is one of my gifts right here now for myself, and I'm talking about it. I'm showing others. I'm showing you out there that there's another way. You don't have to be stuck in your past. You can move forward. You know, that is something which I never even thought possible years ago, and now I'm looking at myself here and I'm sitting here and I'm doing this. I can't believe it. And I'm not the same person I was. Not anywhere near the same person that I was 4 years ago. I'm so different now than I used to be. And I'm so happy, and I'm kind of happy inside all at the same time, if that makes any kind of sense. And I'm happy that I've found another way, and sad that I had to figure it out in this way. I'm sad that I had to figure out in this manner, and it took so long, and I had to hurt myself to the extent that I did to bring myself to bring me to this state where I am now. There was no clear way of finding my path, other than I had to dig into my past and find my path. And that's exactly what I've done. And that's what I'm trying to explain to you, that by taking this as, for example, as I'm giving you, you can find your path as I have. Exploration of new identity, or ongoing from victim to survivor to thriver. That's kind of like what I just said with myself about finding my way. Letting go often is unnerving, and you've invested so much into simply surviving. You might feel like just being a survivor is the only way that defines you. Well, that's so wrong. Being a survivor, it defined me for all those years, but it didn't really truly define who I am. And this is who I am now. This is what defines me. This is why I'm here. This is what I'm talking about. But at this stage, you've incorporated what happened to you into your life. It is not who you are, but just part of who you are. You're likely to find that you think about what happened a lot less and feel a lot more like a stronger version of the old you. This vulnerable yet fluid state provides unprecedented opportunities to get to know yourself, to access your true individuality, strengths, weaknesses, and not only as it releases to sexual abuse. Now it is the time for full-scale person in situation life inventory. So basically, this is where you can go back and do an inventory of your life inventory, as I stated, where you are and what brought you to this state. How healthy or toxic or seemingly virtual relationships and friendships? So how healthy are your relationships and your friendships? How about your health? Where are you there? During this transitional window, do dysfunctional coping patterns, habits of drinking, smoking, drugging, eating, lack of exercise, limited socializing, or spiritual support need to be challenged. What do you need to truly move forward? So your way of coping in the past was, as I've stated, the habits such as drinking, smoking, drugging, eating, lack of exercise, limited socializing, or spiritual support as only an example. I'm sure there's others I could throw in there as well. So you need to challenge those and bring this to another level. And by doing so, you will see that that you will slowly discover who you are, or rather, who you don't want to be, as I've discovered myself for myself. And finally, number 7, acceptance. While submerging yourself into the stages of grief, the time will feel hellish. There truly is an opportunity for rebirth. Getting out the black box is a distinct possibility if you can ride. If you can ride on and ride out this acutely emotionally learning roller coaster. The grief encounter is definitely more than a learning curve, and there is no absolute or fixed period of time for your moving through the stages. As I've talked about in the past, everybody moves through their own stages. The most important thing we can do while healing and grieving is to take the time to gradually recover and discover who I am, as I've talked about. What generally feels like me, what works for me and my family, what seems to be kindle or rekindle my passion. So you're rediscovering all those things, and more importantly, you're rediscovering who you are. Remember, there's a real difference between feeling sorrow for yourself and feeling sorrow. When feeling sorrow for yourself, you are most likely blaming others. When you are feeling sorrow, you're demonstrating the courage to face the fears and pain. There are pivotal moments in your life when we must all take the time to embrace our ourself. Now, let's jump into the when I was talking about the challenges such as drinking and alcohol, or rather drinking and drugging and eating as examples, and spirituality. Well, now I'm going to jump right into a structured grief process. One way to stop reacting out of your inner child is to release the stored emotional energy from our childhoods by doing the grief work, which will heal our wounds. The only effective long-term way to clear our emotional process is to clear the inner channel to the truth, which exists in all of us. Is to grieve the wounds and losses which suffered as children and continue to suffer as adults. An important tool, a tool which may be vital to changing our behavior patterns and attitudes in this healing transformation, is the grieving process. We're all carrying around repressed pain, terror, shame, and rage energy from our childhoods. Whether it was 20 years ago or 50 years ago, we all have this grief energy in us, within us. Even if we came from a relatively healthy family, because this society is emotionally dishonest and dysfunctional. In order to do inner child work, we need to be willing to do the grief work. Emotions on energy, and energy needs to be released. Maybe through crying or raging, we need to find our feelings. What about what happened to us? We need to own our right to be angry that our needs were not met. So basically, what we're saying here is that you need to stir up all that anger, well, rage too, if you like as well. I don't like to use that word rage, because rage usually means something pretty nasty. Rage usually turns into something like that. But all that stuff that's inside you, like the anger and rage that I'm talking about, is a way of finding those feelings that were been repressed all those years. I don't care if it's 1 year, as it states in here, or 20 years or 50 years, but it's still there and it needs to be brought up in order to move forward. Now, we talked about the inner child, we're diving back into that, talking to your inner child. Well, I know that if you talk to your inner child, as I've done with myself, I had an awful lot of anger and hidden rage inside me. And what I've seen from other survivors, I've had the same story. Just again, like everybody's different, so everybody will show it in a different way or fashion, and again, deal with it in their own way. Grief is an energy that needs to be released. We need to give ourselves permission to feel pain, sadness, rage. We need to own and honor the feelings. Part of grief works simply owns to the sadness and the anger. We need to own the grief about what happened to us as children. And then we also need to own the grief, what effect it had on as an adult. It is when we start understanding the cause and the effect of relationship between what happened to the child that we were and the effect it had on us as an adult, we can truly start to forgive ourselves. It is only when we start understanding on an emotional level, on a gut level, that we were powerless to do anything differently than we did, and can truly start to love ourselves. Deep grieving work is an energy work. Once we can get that out of our heads and start paying attention to what is happening in our body, then we can start releasing the emotional energy. Own your voice and own your child's voice. Some grieving may take this form. When we get to the place where emotions are coming up, the voices start breaking. Remember to keep breathing. I've talked about breathing exercise before. We automatically stop breathing and close our throats when feelings get close to the surface. In other words, shutting them out. Own your voice. Own the child's voice. At the point, that technique is to locate where the energy is concentrated in the body. It can be any place from your head to your feet. Much of the time, it is in our back because that is where we carry stuff. We don't want to look at it. Or in an area of the solar plexus, anger or fear or heart or chakra, for example, pain, broken heart, or chest sadness. Then in this individual breaths, starts breaking up the energy in little pieces, and the energy starts getting released. These balls of energy are sobs, basically what they are. This is a terrifying place for the ego, but it feels like out is going on with the flow. Inhale the white light. Exhale is a sob. Sobs, tears, snot from the nose, all forms of energy being released. You can be witness to watching yourself and controlling the process at the same time you are in pain and releasing it. By controlling the process, you are choosing to align yourself with an energy flow. Surrounding the flow, instead of shutting down as a terrified ego wants to do, it is very hard to learn the process without a safe place to do it or someone who knows what they are doing it to facilitate it. You have learned how to do it, then it is possible to facilitate your own grieving process. So, I've talked about arguing with the inner child about being with somebody. I mean, it's the same idea here. Because basically, what you're doing is you've dug up something you've buried or have had hidden inside you all these years, and basically, what you're doing is just stirring it up, and now you've stirred it up. So, what do I do now? How do I deal with it? How do I safely deal with it? You know, how do I deal with it so I don't go over the edge? You know, you want to deal with it, but you want to deal with it in a controlling manner that that you stay safe. And that's why I recommend that when you're going through this process, especially some of these processes that are very heavy and deep, as I'm talking about right now, being a child, you're around somebody that you feel safe with. Or maybe you do feel safe, but nevertheless, you have to have control of that, so you don't lose control of your senses and do something stupid. Identifying losses. In the process of telling your story and exploring your emotions, you may have already identified the losses that resulted from your abuse. These may include the loss of connections with your family members or friends, opportunity to parent or grandparent, spiritually feeling far away from or angry towards God. Well, I can appreciate that. I was angry at God for as long as I can remember. And back to the old self-pity, like, why me? Relationship with your partner, self-esteem, or having a low opinion of yourself. Dreams, goals, or visions for your life. And not coming true. Losses you've experienced or are experiencing as a result of abuse are real. Minimizing or denying them will only slow you down in your healing process. Identifying and acknowledging these losses is an important step toward healing. All thought that it is a different step, you may feel a certain amount of relief when you are able to put the names of the losses that you've experienced. Now, the next thing is accepting your loss. You know, you've pondered with it, and you've held on to it all this time, and it's a really hard thing to, excuse me, let go, as I've had a hard time to do. I fought, and I can actually say that I've actually truly started to let go of some of these things. And all I have to say is I'm amazed how it had such an effect on me, how it basically controlled me. All the things that I've done pretty much all my life. And now I'm at the stage where I'm not going to let that happen anymore. I'm telling you, you can do the same thing too. If you want to work at it, give it a try. There is another way. Accepting loss. After you've identified and acknowledged your losses, deciding to accept and resolve them, is even the next step. The decision to accept and resolve the losses identified above as a decision to grieve them, and the decision to grieve your losses is a decision to feel pain. So basically, by accepting what I've been talking about and accepting your losses because of your pain from the past, will help you identify what's going on with you. Our culture minimizes our grief by either denying it or promoting quick ways to deal with it. Neither of these strategies work well because not only is grief real, but it is a process. Masking reality of grief and the pain does not alleviate the suffering experience. Your losses are real. Your grief is real. Your pain is real. Your ability to move through the grieving process and experience healing is equally real. The grieving process rarely moves in a linear fashion. Grief tends to move in cycles, alternately intensifying and diminishing. Each person works through their grief process differently, some more quickly than others, as I've stated. The intensity of the feeling also varies from person to person. People who have the support of a family and friends are often able to move through this process of dealing with the reality of grief and loss. However, the family and friends aren't always willing or able to lend support to someone experiencing grief. There are also times when people get stuck somewhere in the grief cycle and find themselves unable to complete the process. This is when an aide of a trained counselor or a peer support person is recommended. As you move through the grieving process, will be helpful for you to gather support from others. Be patient with yourself. Give yourself time and space to work through the process, to understand that each person's journey is unique, and to know that the pain will diminish over time. Well, that is such a true statement. But like I say, over a period of time, that is what's happened to me. And through the steps I've talked about in here, as I've taken it upon myself to do, I was able to figure those things out. Now I'm going to talk about anger work. Now this is also an energy flow process. In this process, a bat or a tennis racket, pillow, whatever, lift it over the head as you inhale. As you hit the pillow, you exhale the energy in and shout or grunt, or you could say, fuck you, and a scream, for example. Whatever words come out of you, inhale, exhale, your throat, whatever needs to be said. It's vitally important for us to own our right to be angry about what happened to us or about the ways we were deprived. If we do not own the right to be angry about what happened in a childhood, is greatly impairs the ability to set boundaries as an adult. So basically what you're saying is, if you don't discover these things, then how can you set your boundaries as an adult? We need to own and release the anger and the rage that our abusers, our parents, our teachers, our ministers, or other authority figures, including the concept of God, what we may have believed in while we were growing up. We do not necessarily need to vent that anger directly to them, but we need to release the energy. We need to let that child inside of us scream, I hate you, while I beat pillows or something like that, because that is how a child expresses anger. For some anger work, we need to come before the grief work. Like, for example, forgiving. People who have been abused as children often talk of thought that of forgiving their abuser. Few abusers, if any, deserve forgiveness. However, every abuser, survivor, deserves to be freed from their past. Forgiveness is the key of letting go of our past and embracing a brighter future. Forgiveness is a gift. You give yourself, not your abuser. You do not even need your abuser's participation in order to process, because forgiveness is about you, not about him or her. Here is how you may be able to forgive your abuser or abusers. Even though the statement I said, you need to forgive yourself before you forgive your abuser or anybody else. You need to forgive yourself first before you can move on. Well, before you can truly move on after you've learned all these other things. Okay, so you need a strong desire to heal and patience. Well, patience is a pretty big thing. You need a lot of patience, because you'll find as with my experience going through the healing process, it's been pretty much a roller coaster ride. My roller coaster ride is, granted, it's not so abrupt anymore, but nevertheless, it was a roller coaster ride to where I am now, and I'm not looking back whatsoever for the direction that I'm going. Recognizing the cost of staying bitter, your fuel, bitterness, is thinking about your abuser and the ways he or she damaged your life. This keeps your focus on the past rather than on the present. Staying bitter keeps you mentally connected with the person you do not want in your life. So, like I've been saying, by holding on your past or doing that, that's what happens. You become very, very bitter. I know I was very bitter. Bitter sort of falls into the anger, but or kind of rides ponytail, I guess, with it, or coattail with it, as I've said in the past, just as an observation. Decide what you want to heal. Ask yourself if you are ready to do what it is it takes to serve this connection with your abuser, so you can free yourself from your past. Choose to think of a positive thing. Each time your abuser crosses your mind, choose to think about something that makes you happy instead. Choose to channel your mental energy towards something that brings you joy rather than sorrow. Process painful emotions as they arise. You do not have to ignore your pain or pain to forgive. Keep your focus on healing your pain instead of hating your abuser. So that's what I did for many, many years. I spent so much time focused on what happened to me and my abusers that I basically lost myself. You know, I lost myself to the point where every time I turn around, I think I was doing all right, and I would do something really stupid, or I would self-destruct in some way. Just when things were getting really good, I would fall back and say, "Well, wow, I don't deserve this. Why is it going so good? I might as well destroy it." And that's exactly what I would do. And I know others can appreciate what I'm talking about. I've been through similar experiences. But that's basically what happened to me. What I'm talking about. Your case is maybe different, but nevertheless, that's what happened to me. One important thing, you need to have a strong desire to heal and be patient. As I said, become indifferent to your abuser. As you stop investing your mental energy into hating your abuser, you'll find yourself becoming indifferent to him. While most people think of hate as the opposite of love, the true opposite is indifference. They're so true. Here's a few tips and suggestions. The term forgiveness is a stumbling block, and think of the process of letting go of the bitterness. Forgiveness is not a one-time choice, but a series of choices that redirects your focus away from the past. Forgiveness is not the same thing as a pardon. If the other person has not harmed you, then there should be no need to forgive. Reconciliation is not a required to forgive. Your abuser does not even need to know you have chosen to let go of your bitterness. Finding a qualified therapist or peer support with experience in counseling with people with your abuse history is an important part of your healing from childhood abuse. Your therapist or peer support can help you work through this process of forgiving your abuser. With forgiveness, your victim identifies, dissolves, and your true power emerges, the power of presence. Instead of blaming the darkness, you bring the light. So, I've talked about loss, grief, anger. So I'm curious, does any of that resonate with anybody? Does any of that make sense to you? You not see that by holding on to these fears that I've talked about, how it holds you back from not moving forward? You see what it does to you, to your stomach? See how it makes you angry? See how it makes you feel all horrible inside? Do you understand what I'm saying? You see how it controls you? How it doesn't ever let you move forward, to hold you back? You know, I think about all the time I've wasted thinking about nothing, or rather, well, it wasn't really nothing, just thinking about my past, how it held me back, and where it let me move forward. I think about the anger that I carried, and even the anger that I still carry to this day. How it can control me if I let it. It's so easy, you know, to get angry and just walk away, or say something you regret the next day. It's so easy to fall back on that, and I've done that so many times. And you know what? I'm just so damn tired of living like that. At this stage where I'm at now, it makes absolutely no sense now. So when I talk about it now, I find that it's, well, first off, it's easy to talk about it now, easier to talk about it than it was before. It doesn't bring tears to my eyes like it used to bring tears to my eyes. Well, it still does, but not to the same degree. And I guess the best part about having some kind of understanding about my anger and understanding the loss that I carried all this time is that by finding out where I'm coming from, I actually have some kind of control over it now. And that is, you know, I haven't really put a whole lot of thought process into it, only because I'm thinking about it now, I'm talking about it now, and realizing, holy cow, man, did that ever have a hold of me? And again, holy cow, it doesn't have a hold of me now like it did before. And it can be that way with you too if you wanted to. But with lots of work like I put into it, you can have that control. And you can have that awareness I'm talking about. And in order to move forward, you need to find these things out. And so basically, you know, when you're taking care of yourself, or you're trying to, I'm having trouble putting this to words, but I guess when you're basically trying to find yourself, these are the things you need to do. You know, how can you, I think about what I had to dig up just to move forward. Took me a lot of soul searching. And when I think about the anger and the sadness that I carried about myself, like all this time, what a waste of time it was for me. Like, what a total waste of time. All these years are going by, and what have I got to show for it emotionally? Basically, I got nothing to show for it emotionally other than where I'm at now. And I guess that's still a good thing, a positive thing. But I'm only basically reflecting on before I started this process and how it held me back. That's what I find very, very, very sad. I find very, very disturbing. And I've met other people with the same thing and have held on to this all this time. And it's held on to them so long that it's controlled their lives, like, in such detrimental ways. You know, people I talk about that I'm mentioning about, I've held them back so bad, they've never had a so-called substandard life, whatever the hell that may be. Even I didn't know what the hell a substandard life was, you know, or a so-called substandard life, because I'm so entrenched in my past that it controlled me. When I figured out where my anger was, and I figured out, you know, why I was doing what I was doing, and I figured out my losses, and I figured out why I was grieving, I made a huge difference on finding a foothold to get myself out of this hole. So I've talked about journaling, or if you're really, really brilliant, you take mental notes of your own personal behaviors. That's fantastic. But that's why I keep insisting on journaling, because this way you can, something happens, you have a moment and you write it down, then at least you remember. Because maybe like a month down the road or something, something may happen, it may trigger you, and you could fall back, and you won't remember what you wrote down, or recognize what set you off. So that's why I say that journaling is very, very helpful in helping you find this process to find out why you, or what's buried deep. So I would really appreciate any emails regarding this process. If you have any questions or if you really would like to come and figure out what this is all about, come to the Gatehouse and you'll see this process. And so you can come here. And we're at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard West, Toronto or Old Etobicoke. You can call 416-255-5900. Or you can email the Gatehouse at the Gatehouse website is www.thegatehouse.org, and you can email through the link through there, and we can show you, or at least get you started on a different path other than what you've lived in with all this, all these years. So I'm going to talk a little bit about self-care, but I'm going to talk about that later on, a little bit more towards the end. Now, we talked about anger, you know, and how it controls us. Well, we've kind of dove back into it again, which is what we're talking about. You know, to refresh your memory, anger is emotion, nothing more than nothing less. It's not right or wrong or even logical at times. How people respond to anger is the biggest determining of the outcome. Anger is often a behavior, and it is important to separate the two. People do not give control over what they feel and experience, but they do have the choice on how they respond to how they feel. So what I'm saying is, basically, there's two choices to displaying your anger. And one is having control of it, and the other one is obviously not having control of it. And by not having control of it, your behavior, it could be anything. The outcome is usually that you're going to feel bad after you've displayed it, or there's going to be some sort of negative attribute that will come along with it after you've displayed it. It's been said anger is the backbone of healing. Well, I agree, and is the reason this chapter is, this is a chapter, is a little longer than others. So basically, what I've done is I've bounced back to the anger where I've talked about before, and it sort of falls into what we're talking about. Anger is like gasoline. Used wisely, it will provide energy. If not used wisely, it may blow up in someone's face. Energy is often a pivotal part of the healing process. When in an angry stage, survivors can feel powerful for the first time in their lives. Totally agree with that. Anger is the secondary feeling that follows the other feelings. Imagine yourself driving down the highway when you suddenly driver cuts you off and causes you to slam on your brakes. You got immediately angry with the driver in the other car. However, the anger is probably not the first thing you experienced. Perhaps you felt scared in your life, in shock, or powerless over the situation. Anger follows the other feelings. Becoming aware of secondary feelings beneath the anger is not always easy. Some group members have said they've learned to avoid unpleasant feelings by immediately displaying anger. Over time, this became an automatic response, and anger replaced the expression of other feelings. And it can easily respond in anger fashion, then they work through more vulnerable types of feelings. But it's worth it. There is a difference between residual and reactive anger. Anger from the past is residual, and it is reserved and unresolved issues. Anger from the present is reactive. Reactive anger is a mix with residual and is a good recipe for overreacting. Some people go for counseling, hoping to learn new skills that will assist them in never getting angry again. Anger is a useful emotional, like all other emotions. Limiting anger from the future is not as important as learning to respond to anger in a healthy fashion. Anger is naturally necessary emotionally. That is essential to the healing process. Anger is an energy that gives one an opportunity to resolve conflict. It lets people know that when something doesn't seem fair, perhaps the rights have been violated. Anger gives the energy to take assertive action towards gaining self-respect. Survivors often feel as if they've given given more than they should. And emotion of anger can assist them to reset their boundaries. Anger can provide the opportunity for positive change. When children are not exposed to a healthy role of modeling, they may develop an unhealthy way of expressing their own anger. Some people learn that anger is overly aggressive, as others have learned it's over passive. A healthy, assertive approach that moves towards mutual respect that may have not been modeled for them in the past. Ultimately, how a survivor responds to anger is their choice, but they are responsible for the outcome of their choices. In a similar fashion, a victim is not responsible for the abuse they endured, but they are responsible and will be held accountable for how they responded to their anger, like linked to the abuse. Survivors who have felt field tested this work stated that there were a lot of triggers sparked by questions asked, and they had to remind themselves when to take a break and to please work at a pace that was comfortable, knowing that they would step away from the material. So I'm going to go over it one more time, the four steps of relieving your anger, or at least acknowledge it anyway. The four steps. One is acknowledgement, the feelings of emotions connected to anger, sadness, fear, humiliation, disappointment. Number two, identify the feelings connected to your anger. Again, this is where I'm talking about journaling. By doing this, you can see where you're at. Number three, choose to make a rational decision about how much anger, or rather how much energy you'd be willing to expend on dealing with this situation. And number four, take steps to release the tension. Main focus is to take the anger from within the process, process it and bring it outside of your body. Some situations need very little response, and some require no response at all. However, if a problem needs to be resolved, then you need to take appropriate steps towards finding a healthy resolution. If you can't resolve the situation with any other person, it is important to honor your feelings and emotions by processing them in a healthy way. Some people release anger vulnerably, while others prefer nonverbal methods. Feelings of resentment are an indication that you may be suppressing too much. It is a warning sign to consider working through the concerns in a different way. Knowing when to express, when not to express, how to express, and to what degree is not an easy task. Again, I talk about an anger journal. That's why I keep bringing this up. Journaling is so important. It gives you a basis to work on, to figure these things out that have happened to you inside and that you've held back. And again, it's such a important step in figuring this process out. Now, I've also talked about triggers. What triggers you? Triggering is a big thing. Like what triggers you? Triggering is something that happens to you in the present that reminds you of a traumatic event that happened in the past. Trauma lives in your body. A trigger is part of your body, your nervous system that is frozen in time, revealing the event of the past over and over again. That's kind of like your nightmares, like I guess sometimes. It seems like a record has deep grooving in its deep, a deep groove, and it keeps skipping and skipping and skipping. Everyone has triggers. I've yet to meet someone who doesn't have a trigger of some form or fashion. Everyone and each person has their own unique combination of things that trigger them. And here are some examples. They could show up in any form. For example, someone who reminds you of your abuser, for example. Places where your abuse happened. Situations, loud voices, noise. You're sitting alone, those deep thoughts. Emotions, physical sensations. Triggers can bring up emotions, sensations, and thoughts that you experienced during your abuse. Triggers can be something specific tied to the memory of the traumatic event, like a dark room, sexual activity, or just feeling afraid. They can also be something general, like being in a crowd, a general fear of feeling dread, etc. You can be triggered when you least expect it because triggers work unconsciously. Getting triggered can set off upsetting emotions such as fear, anger, sadness, guilt, or shame. Getting triggered can be set off of physical sensations such as a racing heart, shortness of breath, perspiration, you know, that gut feeling I was talking about, or I've talked about many times, that too as well. When you know that your triggers are, you can prepare yourself in advance. For instance, you might be triggered when going to the dentist. You can prepare yourself by practicing grounding exercises such as deep breathing, positive visualizations, and then it will help you feel safe and cared for. You can do these same practices while sitting in a dentist chair or any other triggering situation. Knowing that your specific triggers is a gateway to becoming and empowering your own life. Ultimately, knowing your triggers can liberate you. So, again, I've talked about journaling, you know, again, and follow back this again. You know, you need to identify these things in order to help yourself move forward. There's one other thing I wanted to talk about briefly, and let me just find it here. Just when you think you got it all in place, sometimes you don't. Okay. Well, I guess I did cover that. After all, I pretty much covered everything that I wanted to talk about. I would like to fall back on what we've talked about a little bit, the loss and grief, a little bit more, meaning how it affected me and holding me back from moving forward. I think about all those years that I've held back, that if I would have had help, how much different I'd be today. I can't go back and think, well, I could have or should have, because that's really not really the case. It's just more the case of, if I would have had the help maybe 10 years ago or 20 years ago, how much of a different person I'd be now. But then again, 20 years ago, there wasn't help for me like there is now. You know? The gatehouse has been around for 16 years ago. I didn't even know about the gatehouse 16 years ago. You know, I wish I had been around 16 years ago because my life would have been a whole lot different than now in comparison to what it potentially could have been. I have no idea, and I can't assume on something that from the past or the future. But nonetheless, it's more of a me thing, if you want to call it that. I guess it's kind of a me thing. You know, like, or what if? Well, you can't go on what ifs. Or I can't think of, well, what I could have done if it was different in the past. That's just, past is gone now. And the only thing you think about now is the future. But reflecting on the past and realizing just the fact that this help had been there, I guess it's daunting enough for me. I guess is my point I'm trying to make. That if the help had been there 20 years ago, thinking about how much differently I could have been, or even you out there, how much differently you could have been if that help had been there 20 years ago. There's such a stigma related to this child abuse, and I can't. I'm still trying to get my head wrapped around this. Why everybody has to be so hush hush about it? I mean, it's, to me, it's no different than going to the store and buy, to me, like, myself personally, the way I'm thinking now, and this is really, really, really a weird, well, you may consider it a weird analogy or good or bad analogy or a bad comparison, but it's, to me, it's no different than what it was. And I think about 25 years ago, going to buy condoms in a store or going to buy pads for my girlfriend because she's in her menstrual cycle, like, that was hush hush and quiet. I mean, most men didn't even want to talk about that or go deal with that. It was, most men I knew at that time, they were ashamed to go to the store and buy that kind of stuff or to even talk about that kind of stuff. But this child abuse thing, okay, I can appreciate where, like, it's pretty heavy subject and most people wouldn't want to talk about it. But you know what? It's in our face every day, you know. Like, you can't, people, you can't keep ignoring this anymore. Something has to be done. Like, it has to be dealt with on another level now. It's not like it used to be. We're not living 50 years ago or 30 years ago anymore. We're not living 20 years ago anymore. We're supposed to be living for the future. We're supposed to be thinking about our children. We're supposed to be thinking, well, when we talk about our children, what are our children supposed to teach their children? Like, we are supposed to be examples of the future. And by coming out with this and dealing with this now, maybe our children in the future will have a better chance. So please, I want you to consider that and think about that. So by dealing with your abuse now and then acknowledging that it happened to you will give our children in the future a better chance. And I say that quite sincerely. I firmly, firmly believe that in my heart, that by doing this, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm here to talk about this. I'm here to let the world know that we're not going to take it anymore, for one thing. Number two, I want people to be aware and that they can't sweep it under the carpet anymore. It's in their face every day and should not be ignored anymore. And I'm talking about everybody. I'm talking about all levels. I don't care if you're government or what religion you may be or what you believe in. The point being is that it's in your face every day and should not be swept under the carpet anymore, and it should be dealt with. In order for our future, or for our children to have a future at a greater level than what they have now, these things should be covered, because literally there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people out there that are struggling with this. And it's not fair. Something should be done about it, and well, something should be done about it now. And I'm the now, and I know others that are the now. And it should not be taken lightly. And you should really, really think deeply and consider about this. How this has hurt society, basically under the covers, is basically what I've done. I hate using that word, under the cover, but that's basically what's happened. Society is undercover. They're hiding this. And it should not be hidden anymore. It should be dealt with face forward, front on, and should not be taken lightly, as I've stated. Because I'm telling you that if this stuff hadn't been dealt with years ago, like with myself and other people that I know, things would be so much different. Not only for our family lives, our jobs, everything. Things would be so much different. A lot of things would be different. I don't know, unless there's something here that I'm missing, I'd like to know about it. But all I know is what I see, what's in my face, and what I see every day. And it really disgusts me, appalls me to no end that I can't believe that this is going on and society still chooses to ignore this. But anyway, now that I've done my rant, I'm going to move on to the announcements that I said at the beginning of this program. I'm going to re-announce them again over again. I'm going to talk about the Healing Garden. We would really appreciate any donations, whether it be like a $20 donation, or if you've got potting soil, like good topsoil. We can use some really good topsoil, peat moss, anything related to gardening. We could really, really appreciate your donations. And number two, again, we're looking for donations again for a sale that we're going to have on August 21st. Anything before that would be greatly appreciated. And I know we've had this for the last few years, and we, the point being is we'd appreciate your donations. I don't like asking for anything, but yes, we would appreciate that. And another thing I'd like to mention too, we would like to know what you would think about peer support over the phone. Well, think about it. Peer support over the phone it has a lot of good value to it for certain individuals, meaning that you don't have to say who you are. You can come on, you can get support. More importantly, nobody else will know who you are, and you'll get the help that that everybody has received here. Great help, too, I may add. You know, I may also throw in, the Gatehouse has been here since 1998, there's 16 years now. We're solely relying on private funding. We do not rely on government funding or any other thing else to keep this house going. It's all been private funding. Donations have kept this house open all this time. And the house is ever so grateful that for those people that have provided for us in that manner. And would like to keep doing so. All the services we offer here, both for men, women, and co, and for children, are all free services. The Gatehouse does not charge for anything. And you know, it doesn't matter what walk of life you're coming from. I don't care if you're in a wheelchair, or if you're from India, or if you're where you're from. It does not matter where you're from. Anybody and everybody is welcome here. So please, if you can, donate to the Gatehouse. We would greatly appreciate it, and especially in the facets I've talked about. Again, you can email me, Stuart, at personaltransformation@thegatehouse.org. If you have anything you want to say, any suggestions, especially in regarding the question I talked about peer-to-peer support over the phone, we'd appreciate any comments, or if you think that would be, if you would use that, that would be great. We'd like to know. Please let us know. And you can also email the Gatehouse at www.thegatehouse.org. Our phone number is 416-255-5900. We're located at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard West, Toronto, Old Etobicoke, and we would appreciate any help possible. Now, tonight, I fell back on some of the things we talked about. I talked about loss and grief. More importantly, until next week, I want you to take care of yourself. Remember to try some breathing exercises. Try to stay grounded. Take care of yourself. And next week, I'm going to be talking about boundaries. And boundaries are a very important part of the steps I've talked about. By establishing your boundaries, gives you a basis of it helps give you a basis of moving forward, whether it be related to your anger or your anxiety, or your inner child, all those things I've talked about, triggers, all those things, boundaries are part of this whole process. And I will dig into that a little bit deeper, and I will have some more announcements on things coming ahead and present. And another thing, and I'm going to mention a few more. I'm going to dig up a few more. I was talking about Twitter and the support for sexual survivors. I'm going to dig up some more Canadian support groups that I found on there as well. I mentioned a few, and they're abroad and here in Canada. And I want you to know that there's more of them out there, not just abroad, but here in Canada. I still think they're few and far between, but nevertheless, the support is there. And I will make sure that you know about it. But in the meantime, I wish you all a good week, a great weekend. And, before I say have a good weekend, well, I was talking about Twitter. And every Thursday on Twitters is abuse awareness on Twitter for survivors of sexual abuse. And I thought I should throw that in there. But anyway, have a great week. And we'll talk to you next week. Our topic for next week will be about boundaries. And thank you for your time, and stay grounded, and bless you. Have a great evening and a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.